right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, September 18th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everybody. We made it. Yeah, it's been another long week. Lots of stuff going on here, but I'm happy because that means that Saturday and Sunday I don't have to do research to do a show. So, how's everybody doing today? It's 71 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. It looks like it'll be an all right one today. I'm just psyched it's Friday. It was long, long. So, where do we leave off yesterday or the day before? We did all kinds of crazy stuff this week and looked at edible vaccines and how we are being assimilated, and that was the name of the show. Yesterday, we are being assimilated whether we like it or not. And we ended up, sorry, there's something itching my arm. We ended up at the end of the show looking at some of the, I don't know if we even made it to that. We looked at DARPA with their biofactories, with their vaccines, using your body to create immunity by flipping switches on and off. And I kind of want to go back to some of the stuff we were looking at a few days ago with the edible vaccines. We had looked at some of their experimentation they'd done with bananas, tomatoes, potatoes, lettuce, and rice. And don't think for a second that there aren't going to be more genetically modified foods out there that'll be quote-unquote nutraceutical therapeutic for you. But I ran across a couple things that I wanted to share with you. So one of the things that we had determined that they were working on was to be able to influence, and this is where a lot of the research is going right now, is to be able to influence the microbiome, your microbiota that lives in your small intestine. They've discovered that there is a direct connection between the vagus nerve from your gut to your brain, and that the bacteria in your gut not only has a lot to do with your health and your immune system, but also has a direct impact on your mood, on your mental state, and your brain chemicals. And it's interesting that now they're trying to crack this microbiome, because this is kind of the new realms of psychology, psychiatry, and the microbiome gut brain axis, they call it. So I want to read just a little bit of this. This is a story out of 2013. And I mean, they've done a few more years worth of research since then. And they've gotten pretty far at learning how brain chemicals, with, of course, the Brain Project, influence not only moods, but reactions and mental illness. So this is a story out of one of those medical journals. I don't know this one. This is PLOS. Microbial endocrinology in the microbiome gut-brain axis, how bacterial production and utilization of neurochemicals influence behavior. And the reason why this is important is one of the things that they were talking about in regards to the edible vaccines was just that, how much better it was through the mucosal lining of the intestines to be able to get what they call life-saving vaccinations or particles into your body. And actually, here, let's go back here. There was a document that came out in the Health and Human Services under the National Institute of Health. I'm trying to see if there's a date on here. This one is from October of 2012, titled Oral Delivery of Human Biopharmaceuticals, Autoantigens, and Vaccine Antigens Bioencapsulated in Plant Cells. And yes, this is back to the edible vaccines abstract, among 12 billion injections. And we read part of this a few days ago. Administered annually, unsafe delivery leads to greater than 20 million infections and greater than 100 million reactions. In an emerging new concept, freeze-dried plant cells, in this case lettuce, expressing vaccine antigens and biopharmaceuticals, are protected in the stomach from acids and enzymes, but are released to the immune system or the blood circulatory system when plant cell walls are digested by microbes that colonize your gut. vaccine antigens bioencapsulated in plant cells upon oral delivery after priming conferred both mucosal and systemic immunity and protection against bacteria, viral, and protozoan pathogens or toxin challenge. Oral delivery of autoantigens was effective against complications of type 1 diabetes and hemophilia by developing tolerance. Oral delivery of proinsulin or extendin 4 expressed in plant cells regulated blood glucose levels similar to injections, and therefore this new platform, these edible vaccines, offers a low-cost alternative to delivering different therapeutic proteins to combat infectious or inherited diseases by eliminating inactivated pathogens, expensive purification, cold storage, transportation, and sterile injections. There you have it. The future of vaccines is going to be through the mouth. We also looked at a few other ways yesterday. Intranasally is something that they've been talking about. We did a story about a week ago where they were saying about how intranasal is a great way to get nanotechnology across the blood-brain barrier and into the brain. And then yesterday we saw that there was something that DARPA had been working on with using nanotech, and we've looked at that a whole bunch of times before. Nanobots being encapsulated in something and injected into you, whether they're doing DNA switch flipping or they're loaded with some sort of nano payload to then target the illness area, whether it be a tumor or it be something that requires treatment, to be able to deliver drugs directly. I mean, this is a scary, brave new world for sure. And this is not your mom and dad's vaccine. All right, now let's get back to this microbial endocrinology and the microbiome gut-brain axis introduction. The ability, oh, wait, let's stop for 1 second. Hey, I ran across one other thing. If anybody is interested, I will put this into the notes of the show once the show is over today. But I thought, you know, I was saying if I went back to school, I'd go back to school for genomics, and I really would love to, and there's probably all kinds of money out there to do some sort of retraining, but who the hell really wants to go sit back in a classroom with 20-something-year-olds? Well, I'm sure there's some of you who'd like that. I know I wouldn't, because I find them highly obnoxious. They don't have a fucking clue. But one of the things that I would be into doing would be to take some online courses from places such as MIT, Harvard, and Yale. And I don't know if you knew this, but a lot of them have been putting their full courseware up onto YouTube along with links to the actual documentation for the class. Well, I did a quick search yesterday, and sure enough, I found it. Free online biology courses in genetics, biotechnology, biochemistry, neurology, and other disciplines. Courses include fundamentals of neuroscience from Harvard University, molecular biology from MIT, and an introduction to bioethics from Georgetown. Yeah, isn't that an oxymoron? But there is a link to that, and I will, like I said, put that under the show in the description today. And you know what? I will go drop this in chat right now and go say hello, people. So I have a lot of technical issues again this morning. I am pretty certain that it is Skype. There you go, chat. I am pretty certain that it is Skype that foobars with your internet connectivity all of a sudden. If Skype is open, I cannot open any stories that have any mad science component in them and have the page load. But the second I log out of Skype, my internet is fine again. So I'm going to blame it on Microsoft. Anyway, all right, let's get back to this microbiome gut-brain axis. Introduction, the ability of bacterial pathogens to influence behavior has been recognized for decades, most notably bacteria that directly invade the nervous system. However, increasing evidence is mounting that microorganisms may directly interact with elements of the host's neurophysical system in a non-invasive manner that ultimately results in the modification of the host's behavior. Well, how amazingly interesting is that, since they've been doing research in how different organisms in your gut influence your behavior. That's a whole part, too, of this whole neuropsychology thing. And And we just had an executive order released on the 15th of September, and we talked about it yesterday. Executive order using behavioral science insights to better serve the American people. We have all these pesky people out there that aren't towing the line, that aren't stepping into line and getting their vaccines and taking their medication and eating their GMOs because, of course, they're getting rid of all the labeling laws. I mean, too much dissent, people. But hey, if we can find a way, and good old DARPA research out there, they've been doing lots of research on brain chemicals, how to influence them and push a button to make a super soldier. So how interesting is it that now we're finding ways to influence the microbiome? We have these edible vaccines that work great in the mucosal linings of the intestine that might have a direct connect to your brain. And I mean, hey, they could make us do anything. They could make us not care anymore about any of this if they just found the right buttons to push. Anyway, back to this article. The ability of the microorganisms contained within the microbiome to influence behavior through a non-infectious and possibly non-immune-mediated route may be due to their ability to produce and recognize neurochemicals that are exactly analogous in structure to those produced by the host's nervous system. This form of inter-kingdom signaling, which based on bidirectional neurochemical interactions between the host neurophysiological systems and the microbiome, meaning that your brain and your gut can talk to each other, was introduced 2 decades ago and has been termed microbial endocrinology. Many of the neuroendocrine hormone biosynthetic pathways are more commonly associated with this is a lot of hard words this early in my coffee drinking, are commonly associated with eukaryotic cells found in the prokaryotic cells. I have no clue. And the acquisition of such neurochemical-based synthesis pathways by the eukaryotic systems is believed to be due to lateral gene transfer from the bacteria. I don't know if that meant anything to anybody, but hey, we all are learning here. Who ever thought we'd be taking classes here in genomics and pathology? If anybody's interested, by the way, and wants to take any of those classes with me, I'm going to try and make like a couple days a week, maybe an hour or two, to sit down and start going through some of those free classes online because I really want to learn more about this. I mean, this is kind of where the rats are hiding. They are doing stuff that most people don't understand. And because people don't understand it, it must be okay, right? We have to believe the scientists because they're way smarter than us, except they're mad scientists. And we're going to find out with this All Cures Act, 21st Century Cures Act, that's what they called it, is just like this Dark Act, which real name is something like Food Safety Act or Safe People Act. I don't know. It's got some crazy name that makes you think it's all about keeping you safe. But really, the Dark Act is not about keeping you safe. It's about hiding from you all the information that you might want to know if you were informed. Anyway, all right, back here. Approaching the microbiome from a microbial endocrinology-based vantage point may provide an understanding of the specific pathways by which microorganisms may influence behavior and thereby lead to new approaches to the treatment of what, oh, specific mental illnesses based upon the modulation of the microbiome gut-brain axis. Yes, and we've been seeing now, we had a couple stories about being able to treat mental disease now with a nasal spray, being able to diagnose schizophrenia from your voice print and running it through an iPhone app. You know, now we have this executive order hiring psychiatrists to work within the federal government to help them use behavioral science insights to better serve the American people, quote unquote, better serve. Yes, making you step in line, like I said, and tow whatever they want us to tow with them instead of being tinfoil hat wearing lunatics. Well, it's interesting, though, when we start digging into the whole brain project, and remember, there were lots of not only federal institutions, but universities that all had the sprinkle funding from places such as DARPA, and we found this out in the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We found this out that not only is it the Brain Project, but it's any of these big biopharma projects, Project BioShield, with their creating mad science gone mad vaccines in the case of an emergency. And again, they've sprinkled this money all over the place for research, but we have tech companies like Google, like Microsoft, like Motorola that are involved in the Brain Project as well, the National Institute of Health, all the big universities, and it is an initiative of the federal government. Here's a story that came out of October 2014. Obama's moonshot project to understand the human brain is getting a financial boost from companies like Google. Yes. And foundations for neurological disorders, the White House announced on September 30th. Obama launched the Brain Initiative in April of 2013 with the goal of unlocking the mysteries of the human brain that, of course, could ultimately lead to treatments of diseases and disorders such as, oh, Alzheimer's. Yes, Alzheimer's, that is now at epidemic proportions. We're discovering there was research that came out that apparently the CDC may have been hiding documents that showed a connection between MMR and autism. We also discovered that maybe mad cow never really went away. Those malformed proteins like they had in mad cow and CJD and scrapie and brain wasting disease also were very similar to the malformed proteins in Alzheimer's. But it also is to help the treatment of diseases such as traumatic brain injury. And of course, yes, that would be DARPA's portion of the Brain Project to help all those soldiers that come back, not only brain injured, but with PTSD, to put in and remove traumatic memories, put in good ones in its place, get memories back that were lost. Yeah, it's all good, man. It's all good. The new commitments announced include $300 million in funding on top of $100 million that the administration already pledged to the project last year. And neuroscientists have made progress in understanding how individual brain cells and molecules work, as well as imaging patterns of whole brain activity. But the Brain Initiative aims to fill this gap of knowledge on what goes on in the middle, at the level of the neural circuits. Huh. I wonder if they're going to be studying the brain-gut axis. To do this, the initiative seeks to develop new tools such as optogenetics, which allows scientists to also manipulate brain cells using light. And yes, we already looked at some of that research that DARPA was doing. That's that flash of light, and they can make memories go away. The Obama administration is very committed to this grand challenge, and the president's science advisor, John Holdren, said in a news conference Tuesday at the White House, "We've gone a long way to understand how the human brain functions at the speed of thought," Holdren said, "and neuroscientists will need a new generation of tools and technologies and the ability to record signals from a much greater number of brain cells at vastly greater speeds." Companies such as Google and who? Oh, General Electric. Yes, that same General Electric that's responsible for the BWR reactor that is melting down times 3 or 4 or 6 or how many ever it is now in Fukushima. Yes, that General Electric. That General Electric where I don't even remember his name. The CEO was made our jobs are. And then he sucked all the healthcare jobs out of GE and sent them to China. Yeah, that General Electric that pays zero taxes and owns one of the 6 companies that owns the mainstream news. Yes, that same General Electric and members of the National Photonics Initiative are partnering with the Brain Initiative by investing $30 million in additional funding, as well as providing equipment and expertise, the White House officials announced. So Google is providing equipment and expertise and whatever, I'm sure some of their AI initiative as well, to the White House in regards to their brain initiative. That same White House that just had an executive order hiring psychiatrists to help them with their behavioral science insights. In addition, foundations such as Simons Foundation in New York City and universities such as Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh are aligning more than $240 million of their existing research efforts with the Brain Initiative as well. And the initiative, whose founding members include the National Institute of Health, the National Science Foundation, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, will also grow to include who? Oh, the FDA. Yes, the FDA, tasked with keeping you safe. And the Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Activity, which is IARPA. And in June, the National Institute of Health released a report outlining a roadmap for achieving the goals of the Brain Initiative, including developing methods for mapping and manipulating brain circuits as new theoretical models of the brain. The National Institute of Health also announced an additional $46 million in grant awards for the Brain Initiative, and the grants will fund 58 research efforts for projects ranging from wearable brain scanners to real-time imaging of brain signaling chemicals. The White House highlighted the promise of building on recent advances in studying the brain, as well as harnessing technologies developed by the consumer electronics and military industries for developing new tools for understanding the brain. Yeah, I'm going to step right up and be number one in line for this, especially when I found this wiki entry yesterday titled G20 World Brain Scientific Summit. Yes, the very first one was in 2014. The G20 World Brain Mapping Summit of 2014. Amen Clinics, spelled A-M-E-N, CompuMedics Inc., SBMT, and BMF held its first annual summit on G20 World Brain Mapping and Therapeutic Initiative in Brisbane, Australia, November 13, 2014, in the Mercure Hotel. And if you remember, back about a month ago, we also looked at part of this Brain Initiative and Sprinkle Funding. There was this whole project that tied neuroscience research from the United States in with Israel. They were encouraging all kinds of dual research and sprinkling tons of dollars to encourage Israeli participation with U.S. scientists. Anyway, the summit started with messages of cooperation from the U.S. And members of the Canadian Parliament. The summit program included talks from top U.S., Australian, Italian, Turkish, and European brain mapping initiative scientists covering topics such as advanced imaging and diagnosis of Alzheimer's, psychiatric disorders, brain cancers, neurodegenerative disorders, big data and brain mapping, strategies for global clinical trials, policies that could facilitate translation, integration, and commercialization of devices and therapeutics such as nano-neurosurgery, nano-neuroscience, neurotrauma, and military medicine, as well as a roundtable discussion with U.S. and Canadian policymakers. The next second annual G20 World Brain Mapping Summit of 2015 will be at Üsküdar University, Istanbul Hospital in Istanbul, Turkey, in November of 2015. It's how interesting they're calling it the G20 World Brain Mapping and Therapeutic Scientific Summit. So put on a seatbelt, people. This taking control of the brain, of neurochemicals, of understanding how they all interact and how to influence them, and now edible vaccines that have direct access to your microbiome that can directly influence via the vagus nerve chemicals in your brain should be a red alert. And if that isn't a red alert, then this is. We saw back about a month ago that Google now has a new parent company called Alphabet. They dropped Google down a notch and made Alphabet the umbrella, where they're going to put some of their life sciences divisions, such as Calico, which is their immortality project, and Google X. Well, check this out, right on the heels. And actually, it was the very same exact day, September 15, 2015, the day that Obama inked the executive order titled Using Behavioral Science Insights to Better Serve the American People. And yeah, someone had mentioned that in chat when we first saw this. Reminds me of the Twilight Zone, To Serve Man. If you haven't seen that one, you most certainly should. That was actually my all-time favorite Twilight Zone episode. And that's how I'm seeing this all panning out. Literally, it's not going to be a cookbook, but it is how to serve man. It's how to serve man right into the... I don't even know. Step right up and fall right into line. Anyway, to add insult to injury, the very same day that that executive order was inked, good old Alphabet has named U.S. Mental Health Agency Director Thomas Insel to be working on mental health in their life sciences division. Who knew that Google had a life sciences division that was dedicated to mental health? And we had postulated 2 days ago that as they crack all of these different keys with the brain and they diagnose mental illness with voice patterns, I had actually kind of joked at the fact that Google has a patent, as well as Samsung and others, for collecting your voice from your computer. You know, hey, they're not really paying attention to what you're saying. They're using it for advertising, right? They're opening your microphone and they're collecting voice in a room about you and then doing something with it. But I had kind of joked that maybe they'd be taking that and diagnosing who sounds mentally ill through their voice patterns. Well, now, yes, Google can do that because they have a U.S. Mental Health Agency director on board. The director of the U.S. National Institute of Mental Health, Thomas Insel, is joining Alphabet's Life Sciences, which was spun out from Google X. You know, and then to find out that Google's all mixed in with his brain project, this all starts to really make sense now, doesn't it? Starting on November 1st, Insel will lead a mental health effort at Alphabet, according to a letter from the National Institute of Health. And how interesting, too, because as he slides out of this seat, they can now slide someone even more horrifying into his old position. Insel served as the director of the National Institute of Mental Health for the last 13 years, and under his guidance, the National Institute of Mental Health launched initiatives like the Psychiatric Genomics Consortium. How nice. A project that looks for links between genetic data and psychiatric illnesses. And the Army STAR project, which was designed to identify factors that can protect service members' mental health. He is now headed for Life Sciences, a Google-founded company that works on not only mental health, but genetics, cancer, and diabetes, and the first company to fall under the new Alphabet umbrella. Tom is coming on board to explore how the life sciences team at Google could have an impact on the huge challenges related to understanding, diagnosing, and treating mental illness. We're talking about Google here, people. Google's going to be treating mental illness? I guess so. And diagnosing mental illness? I guess so. Says Jacqueline Miller, a spokesperson for the life sciences team at Google. Incel will determine which projects life sciences should pursue in mental illness and then lead those efforts, but the company declined to comment further. In his new role, Incel will explore how to create technology that can be used to prevent, diagnose, and treat, quote, a wide spectrum of issues in mental health, says the NIH director, Francis Collin, in the letter. So, yeah, a wide spectrum of issues in mental health, like people who are tinfoil hat wearing lunatics who look at science and go, what are you trying to sell us with all your propaganda? Yeah, that type of spectrum of issues. Says Bruce Cuthbert, former director of the Division of Adult Translational Research at the National Institute of Mental Health, will be replacing Incel as director while the agency conducts a search for a permanent replacement. So put on a seatbelt, because Google just jumped in 2 feet ahead into this mental health initiative. I don't know, guys. This is pretty scary to me. When we have technology that's working with the federal government and biopharma companies, and they are all trying to crack the mysteries of biology, and they're learning how to control them, manipulate them, and make them do what they want to do, and they're doing it without their knowledge, and they're getting rid of labeling, and they're doing mad science projects and telling you that it's all okay, it's for your own good, it's for your protection and your safety, and the majority of the population is falling for it. We need to be very scared. All right, there was another story that came out of foreignpolicy.com titled, "This is Your Brain. This is Your Brain as a Weapon. Cutting-edge neural technologies can erase traumatic memories and read people's thoughts. They could also become the 21st century's next battleground." Yes. An otherwise routine day in July inside a laboratory at Duke University. Two rhesus monkeys sat in separate rooms, each watching a computer screen that featured an image of a virtual arm in two-dimensional space. And the monkey's task was to guide the arm from the center of the screen to a target. And when it did so successfully, the researchers rewarded them with sips of juice. Wonder if there's high fructose corn syrup in the juice. But there was a twist. The monkeys were not provided with joysticks or any other devices that could manipulate the arm. Rather, they were relying on electrodes implanted in portions of their brain that influence movement. The electrodes were able to capture and transmit neural activity through a wired connection to the computers. And to make things even more interesting, the primates shared control over the digital limb. And remember, we had looked at BrainNet a few times now, being able to connect brains to a cloud so you could literally be a Borg. In one experiment, for example, one monkey could direct only horizontal action while the other guided just the vertical motions, and yet the monkeys began to learn by association that a particular way of thinking resulted in movement of the limb. And after grasping this pattern of cause and effect, they kept up the behavior, joint thinking, essentially, that led the arm to the target and earned them the juice. Neuroscientist Mikhail Nikolinas, who led the research published earlier this year, is a name for this remarkable collaboration. It is called BrainNet. There we go. Ding, ding. Ultimately, Nikolaos hopes that brain-to-brain cooperation could be used to hasten rehabilitation in people who have neurological damage. And of course, that's always how they sell it. More precisely, that a healthy person's brain could work interactively with that of a stroke patient, who would then relearn more quickly how to speak or move a paralyzed body part. But in this title, they had also said they could use it to read people's thoughts, or, hey, maybe influence people's thoughts. It says, From the medical perspective, a great deal stands to be gained from all this, including more dexterous prosthetic limbs, new insights into diseases such as Parkinson's, and even treatments for depression and a variety of other psychiatric disorders. That's why around the world, major research efforts are underway to advance this field. Yes. But there are potentially dark sides to this innovation, you think? Neurotechnologies are dual use, which means that in addition to being employed in medical problem solving, they also could be applied or misapplied for military purposes. The same brain scanning machines meant to diagnose Alzheimer's disease or autism could potentially read someone's private thoughts. And computer systems attached to brain tissue that allow paralyzed patients to control robotic appendages with thought alone could also be used by a state to direct bionic soldiers or pilot an aircraft. And devices designed to aid a deteriorating mind could alternatively be used to implant new memories or extinguish old ones in allies and enemies alike. And we've talked about all these. They are doing research on every single one of those right now. Consider Nicolaus's BrainNet idea taken to his logical extreme, says bioethicist Jonathan Moreno, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, which happens to be the same place that they're making the edible lettuce vaccines. Merging brain signals from two or more people could create the ultimate super warrior. What if you could get the intellectual expertise of, say, Henry Kissinger, oh God, who knows all about the history of diplomacy and politics, and then you get all the knowledge of somebody that knows about military strategy, and then you get all the knowledge of a DARPA engineer, and so on, he says, referring to the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and then you put them all together, and such a brain net would create near military omniscience in a high stakes game with political and human ramifications. It says, to be clear, such ideas are still in the realm of science fiction, thank goodness, but not for long. It's only a matter of time, says experts, before they become realities. Neurotechnologies are swiftly progressing, meaning that eventual breakout capabilities and commercialization are inevitable. I know they were working on already doing drone pilots via BrainNet. And the governments are already getting in on the action. DARPA, which executes groundbreaking scientific research and development for the U.S. Defense Department, has invested heavily in brain technologies. In 2014, the agency started developing implants that detect and suppress urges. And that was being able to manipulate brain chemicals. They were looking at fear and some of the fear brain chemicals, and then determined that if they were able to push a button and release things such as adrenaline, that the soldier would be able to plow on into battle. Says they started developing implants that detect and suppress urges. The stated aim, of course, is to treat, and this one is for veterans suffering from addiction, depression, and PTSD. It is conceivable, however, that this kind of technology could also be used as a weapon, or that proliferation could allow it to land in the wrong hands. It is not a question if non-state actors will use some form of neuroscientific techniques or technologies, says James Gorriotto, a neuroethicist at Georgetown, but when and which ones they will use. So not a question that some terrorist is going to get it, but when and which ones. People have long been fascinated and terrified by the idea of mind control, and it may be too early to fear the worst. I don't think it's too early to fear anything. We need to nip the shit right in the bud is what we need to do. But the brains will soon be vulnerable to government hacking. But the dual use potential of neurotechnologies looms, and some ethicists worry absent a legal framework to govern these tools, and legal frameworks don't protect us at all, we know. Advances in the lab could enter the real world dangerously unencumbered. For better or for worse, the brain is the next battle space. And that reminds me, I had a story here. And if I can get there quick, we'll do it. I had a story here from the other day that we never got to. Of course, I had it up to read today. And every single tab in my Chrome browser was frozen. It had some flash issue. And I had to kill the entire session to be able to get it back. But let's see. There was a big story here about sound waves and brain manipulation that was pretty damn interesting as well. We're going to do some music, I think. As I'm scrolling my feed. If I can't find it, I'll have to go on to something else. Actually, here, maybe we can play a clip. But I got to connect again now because you have to disconnect Skype, which is pretty crazy. All right, here, let me add myself. We'll play this. There was a brand new video about linking brains together, and I don't think we did that one. I don't know. Things have been a little discombobulated with all these technical issues on a daily basis that I have to deal with pre-coffee. It's not what I call fun. Hopefully I don't have any audio playing in the background here. All right, there we go. Here, harnessing the power of linking multiple brains. Maybe this will work. Oh, right. Skype's open, so maybe this won't work now because nothing loads as soon as Skype is open. Wow, this really sucks. I might certainly have to take a look at some other alternative because I don't know if this is going to be functional anymore. All right, well, I found that other story, so I guess we're going to have to screw linking the brain together. Jesus. All right, let me kill Skype. And let me literally turn Skype off so I can now get the story to load. Wow, what a pain in the ass. And here it comes. This was also the same day that Obama released his initiative about behavioral insights, the same day that Google appointed the head of the National Institute of Mental Health to their life sciences division to focus on mental health care. In a first, it's out of Medical Express, in a first, scientists use sound waves to control brain cells. Yes, they have. Salk scientists have developed a new way to selectively activate brain, heart, and other cells using ultrasonic waves. How interesting is that? We had discovered in a treatment out of Australia utilizing ultrasound, they were able to break up some of the amyloid plaques. They're like, oh, we might have a new treatment for Alzheimer's. And it opened up the blood-brain barrier. But just before that, we had read some research in a medical journal about how opening up that blood-brain barrier was necessary for getting nanotechnology into the brain. So I don't like any of this at all. Now we found that they can actually control cells with ultrasonic waves as well. The new technique, dubbed sonogenetics, has some similarities to the burgeoning use of light to activate brain cells in order to better understand the brain. And we just talked about that one. So light and sound to manipulate brain cells. This new method, which uses the same type of waves in medical sonograms, may have advantages over the light-based approach known as optogenetics, particularly when it comes to adapting the technology to human therapeutics. This was described in a September 15, 2015 entry in the journal Nature Communications. Light-based techniques are great for some uses, and I think we're going to continue to see development on that front, says Shikanashkni, however you say that, an assistant professor of Salk's Molecular Neurobiology Laboratory and senior author of the study. But this is a new additional tool to manipulate neurons and other cells in the body. In optogenetics, researchers add light-sensitive channel proteins to neurons they wish to study, and by shining a focused laser on the cells, they can selectively open these channels either by activating or silencing the target neurons. That's frightening. Being able to silence neurons, that's just like DNA switch flipping on and off. But using an optogenetics approach on cells deep in the brain is difficult. Typically, researchers have to perform surgery to implant a fiber optic cable that can reach the cells. And we saw something like that. They were nano optics, I believe, where they had embedded them into the moth brain. They were able to literally control the moth's motor movements. It says, plus, light is scattered by the brain and by other tissues in the body. Chichani's group decided to see if they could develop an approach that instead relied on ultrasound waves for activation in contrast to light. Low-frequency ultrasound can travel through the body without any scattering. You know, I had a whole section of stuff that I lost of research when I had another major crash here recently that was looking at low-frequency sound waves that are put out by different electronic devices and damage that they're discovering that it does to the body. So the fact that this is another low frequency wave and they're practicing with this, this is a little disturbing to me. And this is absolutely mad science. And of course, we're not going to be doing any major research with this new 21st Century Cures Act because we need to speed the innovation of cures to the people and damned those regulatory agencies that are holding back cures that could be helping billions of people. We need to just fast track everything without doing long-term studies. It says, anyway, low-frequency ultrasound can travel through the body without any scattering, and it could be a big advantage when you want to stimulate a region deep in the brain without affecting other regions. It says, they found that so far, cytogenetics has only been applied to a C. englands neuron, but TRP4 could be added to any calcium-sensitive cell type in any organism, including humans. And then the microbubbles could be injected into the bloodstream. I don't think I like that. And distributed through the body, an approach already being used in some human imaging techniques. Ultrasound could then non-invasively reach any tissue of interest, including the brain, be amplified by microbubbles, and activate the cells of interest. And many cells in the human body, he points out, can respond to the influxes of calcium caused by TRP4. The real prize will be to see whether this could work in a mammalian brain, he says, and his group has already begun testing this approach in mice. And when we make the leap from therapies for humans, I think that we will have a better shot at non-invasive cytogenetics approaches than with optogenetics. Oh, this is just really unbelievable science fiction-y crazy. I really don't want any part of this. And if not to add insult to injury, we had looked at something already a whole bunch of times, and that was the electronic medical records. I've talked about those. That's been a big push now for quite a number of years, and I had postulated that with Obamacare, the electronic health records and slicing and dicing us and putting us into a database to be able to bag and tag everything about us, including our DNA, right? We discovered that many millions of people, whether they know it or not, their DNA is being put into a database that's already being used for global genomics research. Well, we knew this was coming September 2nd, 2015, out of PharmGKB blog, Electronic Medical Health Records and Genomics Network, to receive more than $48 million from the National Institute of Health, and they are calling this Collaboration eMERGE. The National Institute of Health grants totaling more than $48 million have been awarded to support phase 3 of the eMERGE network program. eMERGE is a consortium of research institutions focused on linking genome-wide genotyping or sequencing data with patient electronic medical records in order to improve patient care. eMERGE PGX, a partnership between eMERGE and Pharmacogenomics Research Network, has successfully deployed a next-generation sequencing platform called PGRN-Seq to sequence very important pharmacogenes in patients across eMERGE sites with a goal of integrating pharmacogenic genotypes into electronic health records as well as associated clinical decision support. Among the awardees of the National Institute of Health grants were researchers at Vanderbilt University, an eMERGE site, led by Dan Roden and Joshua Denny. The group will investigate the impact of rare variants on health and drug response, as well as expand pharmacogenomics research for enhanced decision in care and treatment pipelines. And remember last week, we had looked at 23andMe, and there was a spinoff company. I don't remember if they gave that a name or not, and they brought over somebody pretty important to 23andMe to head this new biopharma drug development company where they were going to be using the DNA databases and the genomic information that was already collected on millions of individuals and a whole bunch of them that checked a box that said, yeah, you can use my genomics data for research. We also had another federal initiative, the National Institute of Health, that had partnered with 23andMe, of course, as a Google spinoff company. Sergey Brin's wife runs 23andMe, to be able to develop new drugs. This precision medicine, this bioeconomy, is going to be the death of us all. So, all right, to round out the show, let's look at the 21st Century Cures Act. National Institute of Health funding. This bill amends the Public Health Services Act and reauthorizes the National Institute of Health through 2018. And it helps all kinds of things. The National Institute of Health and Food and Drug Administration must implement a system that allows further research on clinical trial data, and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention must expand surveillance of neurological diseases. The National, the Department of Health and Human Services must revise health information and protect information of research purposes to be treated as used for healthcare operations, remote access to information by researchers and individuals to authorize future use of their information for research. Isn't that what we were just talking about? But there were other things in here, and I don't know. We might have to hit on these on Monday because this is a pretty damn long document, and I want to be able to outline how they're going to fast track. Wow, this is crazy. Now I can't even. Hold on 1 second. They want to be able to fast track drug approval because they are holding back on us. Now here, let's see if we could get this to work. Here's these two senators talking about this new 21st century agenda.
Well, hello there. I'm Fred Upton.
And I'm Diana DeGette.
And I'm a Republican from Michigan.
And I'm a Democrat from Colorado.
You know, we know that you've probably heard a lot about the gridlock, dysfunction, and division in Congress, for sure.
It's true. We do have our differences. Fred and I don't agree on everything, but we do agree on this. America can be, it must be, the healthcare innovation capital of the world.
You know, you may not realize it, but together, we have already accomplished a lot to improve public health with a whole number of bills supporting medical research enacted over the last couple of years. I'm also proud to say that I helped lead the charge back in the 1990s, bipartisan effort, to double the funding of the National Institutes of Health.
This is a good start, but now it's time to go bigger.
You know, in the 21st century, healthcare innovation is happening at lightning speed. From the mapping of the human genome to the risk of personalized medicines that are linked to advances in molecular medicine, we've seen constant breakthroughs that are changing the face of disease treatment, management, and certainly cures.
Health research is moving quickly, but the federal drug and device approval apparatus is still, in many ways, the relic of another era. We have dedicated scientists and bold leaders at agencies like the NIH and the FDA. But when our laws don't keep pace with innovation, we all lose out.
So if we want to save more lives, and we do, and keep the country the leader in medical innovation and the jobs here, we've got to make sure that there's not a major gap between the science of cures and the way that we actually regulate these therapies.
I'm going to stop for a second because what they're saying, and there's a document that goes along with this, they're saying that, you know, the FDA and doing all this research before they release it to the public is holding back all these great 21st century cures with biomedicine and genomics and mad science gone mad. So we need to get rid of all the testing and get it out there to the people who are being hurt by them not being out there in a timely fashion.
For the first time ever, we in Congress are going to take a comprehensive look at what steps we can take to accelerate the pace of cures in America. We're looking at the full arc of this process, from the discovery of clues in basic science, to streamlining the drug and device development process, to unleashing the power of digital medicine and social media at the treatment delivery phase.
To unleashing is the key word of discovery, development, unleashing our mad science drugs on you and social media, and that's part of your behavior initiative.
You know, all of that is so exciting, but we know that we don't have all the answers. That's why we're asking questions first. We want to listen, and we are. We want to know how to close the gaps between advances in scientific knowledge about cures and the regulatory policies that are created to save more lives.
How can we make sure our best scientists spend more of their time in the laboratory discovering cures rather than just writing grant proposals?
And how can we foster even more collaboration using new technological resources like cloud computing or social media?
Are there new ways to improve the process of developing and approving new drugs and devices?
You know, our understanding of disease at the genetic level can certainly help reduce the costs and quicken the pace of clinical trials. That means patients potentially have faster access to those treatments. What do we need to make this happen?
What do we need to make mad science gone mad go full tilt and release it on your children with government edict? All right, guys, everybody have an awesome Friday. Make sure you stick around. Lonnie Clark is up next. Josh live at 6. The boys from Primertime at 8. Truth on the Tracks. Reality Bites. All right, guys, stick around this week.